Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
And it's all over!
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll him out, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
Way of the Warrior, Eric O'Brien, along with Ken Evans. Sean Dizay is out traversing the world doing something in mixed martial arts. I'm not exactly sure.
But probably making more UFC dream posters. He finds these online where Brock Lesnar is going to fight against Anderson Silva, and he shoots it to us. He gets tricked easily. Like, he thinks these are all real. It's like, did you see this? This will be a great fight. Sean, that's not real. That is the Hulk in that UFC poster.
And it's Brock Lesnar, so.
Right, Brock Lesnar versus the Hulk. Although I think it's even matchup, can't be real because the Hulk does not exist. I'm sorry.
Well, says you.
I'm sorry. Yes, says me.
As usual, the show is brought to you by our friends at Gun Lake Casino and Onnit Supplements online at onnit.com/wowshow. Make sure you say hello to those guys online. So this is the dreaded time when you do shows like this, when there aren't any actual events. But luckily, there's no shortage of news. We will talk to Jeff Wagenheim from Sports Illustrated. He will talk about Shane Carwin, who has announced his retirement after only 12 fights and six of them in the UFC. So he ended up being 4-2 in the UFC. We'll talk about his impact on the sport.
Former heavyweight champion of the world. I'm surprised this isn't getting more play.
Well, but do you think it's because it's six fights? And we'll talk to Jeff about this, but six fights, when you think about it, how much impact did he really have? I mean, people on our Facebook page were really excited about when he brutalized Frank Mir. But that's about all people want to talk about, is that singular fight, because the last two were really not that great. He gassed out against Brock Lesnar, and then Junior Dos Santos.
Well, are people mad? Because I know you're saying six fights, but I mean, he had a longer career than the UFC.
Of course he did. But I mean, most people don't realize that there were another six fights where he just steamrolled through people before he got to the UFC.
Yeah, I just think a guy, he's been fighting as long as he did. It took him a long time to get to the UFC. When he got there, he was able to win that, I guess, interim heavyweight championship at the time. And like you said, he did. He brutalized Frank Mir, a guy who most of us picked in that fight. So I know we'll talk more about it later, but I just think it's interesting that we don't seem to be getting a lot of play here. And, you know, Sean's not here to make a lot of fun of Brock Lesnar after I talk about him. Brock's a tough out. Brock's, ask Randy Couture about Brock being a tough out.
Sure.
Junior Dos Santos, another tough out.
Really so, tough out. But what's interesting, Ken, is I look at this and I
not
see...
Not only his most recent two losses, his only two losses.
Yes, his only two losses are to two former champions.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it. What's interesting, though, is, like you said, took Shane a while to get into the organization, got in at what we would consider a late age, and this is kind of what we've been talking about with Daniel Cormier, who this week announced he's going to hang out at heavyweight for a little bit longer and see what happens and see where that path is going to take him. He's got a couple things going against him, obviously. Number one, his age, and number two, he tried to get down to 205 for the Olympics and his body failed at him. But what I look at this, I see, is this the model for somebody that's that age at that competitive of a level? Heavyweight, anybody can knock your lights out, and as you get older, that becomes easier to do, proverbially speaking.
It's not just the template, so to speak, of what could happen in those fights or how you can lose a fight. I think it's the template on how you're going to age into the fight game. Now, and it's very interesting because it's Shane Carwin. He's a heavyweight. We've typically given those heavyweights a little more leeway, saying, you know, they're not as fast. They're not as quick. Their reflexes aren't what are really their attributes. It's being big and tough. Well, I think that's changing quickly as you see super athletic guys yes. in the heavyweight division. I think you see with a guy like Shane Carwin, who's 38 now, and like you said, he's had those six UFC fights. So he's essentially one of those guys that came into the UFC, I think we're 4 or 5 years ago now, right about that age that we're seeing a guy like Daniel Cormier. And this is what Daniel Cormier realistically has to look at in the situation, because he's coming into the UFC. And when you come into the UFC, I feel like you're probably looking at that situation like, I'm going to be here for years, and I finally made it.
Yes.
You've done all that work. You've gotten there. And it is true. It's harder to stay on top than to get to the top. And when you're in the UFC, you are on top. And Cormier has to look very hard at these next few fights. He says he wants to hang out at heavyweight, which is fine if he's having those weight cut issues before. I think having a weight cut issue once in your life, I don't think that should negate the fact that Daniel Cormier should look very closely at the situation and, you know, call our friend Dolce up and get him on the phone and say, can you do this for me? Is this real? Because I don't know where his career is going to go, but he's really got 3 or 4 years to maximize it at most. And he's going to have to figure out a way to do that. And the weight cut, I think, is where everybody who talks about Daniel Cormier says that's where he probably needs to go, because I don't know if he can beat a Junior Dos Santos, a Cain Velasquez, maybe even a Roy Nelson. I don't know if he can beat those guys.
Sure.
So what do we do with a guy like Daniel Cormier? Well, does he go down to light heavy? Does he do a catch fight with John Jones? I think this is an interesting dynamic, because we have been talking a lot about Daniel Cormier, is to look at a guy like Shane Carwin. I don't think when Shane Carwin got in the UFC and started going on a couple of fights, win streak there, you know, he won 4 fights in a row. Nobody thought he would have 2 more fights and be done in the UFC.
And to your point, only 3 years, 2008 to 2011, and that was it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because that's right. He hasn't fought in over a year. So yeah,
over 2 years almost.
Yeah, this coming summer probably.
Yep.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I had forgotten he had been out of it so long. And the injuries, the nagging of everything
his
happened.
His back injuries is what you're referring to.
Yeah, he can't get over those things, and he's had to retire. So I don't think anybody looks at Daniel Cormier right now, and maybe we've talked about it more than others, and says he's going to be gone in 2 years. But it's a very realistic possibility, and it's interesting when you look at a former interim champion like Shane Carwin. It can happen to the guys who beat the biggest and the baddest in there and who've gone in there in that cage. Daniel Cormier, you're up next, so to speak, and seeing what a guy can do when he's past his 30s and just starting in the UFC.
And it's interesting because we talked a lot about, you know, a guy like Randy Couture who fought well into his 40s and had bucked the system. You know, that is not the norm.
No, you have two guys, and you know the other answer.
Yes, that's where I was going, is Anderson Silva. And that is it, guys. This is not, there is no formula for how you fight into your 40s unless your name is Randy Couture, and not your last name being Couture, as Ryan Couture has proven. Your name has to be Randy Couture, and your name has to be Anderson Silva. And perhaps when we talk about John Jones, who's already on the mend from this foot injury, maybe he is also athletically gifted in the way that his body just naturally heals in that way that he'll have a long career, even though he started so early at such a high level. I mean, mm-hmm. Anderson obviously started early but fought in many other places prior to getting to the UFC and fighting Chris Leben. But these are really the only two examples you can show of guys who've been able to be at a high level.
Well, let's remember, too. I remember back when Chuck Liddell was fighting, he was, I think, 36, 37, and he was still a world beater. You couldn't put anybody in there that could beat him that he couldn't come back and beat later. Well, you saw him go on that streak where he lost to Quentin Rampage Jackson. He then lost to Keith Jardine. Nobody saw that coming.
Nope.
I mean, he was able to get that win against Vanderlei, but never won again in his career. That's the precipice. It's a cliff in MMA. Yeah. You don't come gently down a hill as you get older and get closer to your 40s. Like you said, two guys have been able to do it at this point. I would disagree with you now, and I know we're talking 15 years into the future. So when we're doing our show in 2028, we'll come back to this topic with John Jones. I don't think he's going to make it. I mean, he's going to be dominant. He's got another decade, but even another decade puts him at what, 34?
Right. And maybe he doesn't want to fight for 20 years, you know, and that's probably a really good point. But another guy who I think athletically you might be able to make that case if he wants to, but you're probably more on the lines that, yeah, he's going to fight for seven, eight more years, and
right.
then that's going to be a wrap.
Well, especially when he jumps to heavy. And we all want to see him make that jump and think it's going to be that natural progression, the opposite of what we talk about with Daniel Cormier. When he makes that jump to heavy, it's bigger dudes. It's harder hits. His athleticism is going to shine against a lot of those guys. But a lot of those guys are just as big and bad as John Jones. Now, are they as quick? Are they as athletic? Are they as gifted? We don't know the answer. We get to see that answer, but it's not a leap to say some of those guys are going to take a couple of months or years off his career in some of these fights.
The fascinating aspect of this, though, Ken, is when you talk about a guy like Randy Couture and you talk about a guy like, let's say, Matt Hughes, and you talk about a guy like Chuck Liddell, all three of these guys have found life in the UFC that has nothing to do with fighting. Rich Franklin will also be another one. I believe if he wants to do that, they'll probably find a space for him. John Jones has some charm and has had some shining moments on TV, not so shining moments with the Chael Sonnen lead up to the fight.
Mm-hmm.
But another guy that when he gets to 33, 34 and his kids are growing up and they're in high school and he wants to spend more time at home, he easily could transition into some sort of job like that where he wouldn't need to do this to put food on the table. He will have, if everything goes according to plan, been with Nike for a decade at that point. You know, we're talking like
right.
Jordan-esque sort of sponsorships at that point.
So are you saying we look at this Shane Carwin retirement, we're wondering what's going to happen, where he's going to go? Because I think it's an interesting thing to look at. Of course, you're going to have fighters in UFC that make it there, and that's great. That's a huge accomplishment. Like I said, the UFC is the top, but you have to wonder, with a guy like Shane Carwin, I don't know what he's doing. I don't know his outside ventures. I don't know enough about the man.
He was a contractor, like did construction.
I knew he was doing some of that while he was still fighting in the UFC, because, I mean, again, that was still back 2008.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing how quickly UFC has come in just those 5 years to remember that guys fighting at that level were still
a guy with a belt had another job. Remember that.
I don't think it was at that point, but it was close. It was within a couple of years of that. So do you look at a guy like Shane Carwin and wonder, hey, we have to look? Obviously, he's had a couple of years out of it, so he's known it's coming. Again, I don't know what he's transitioned into or what he plans to do. He really hasn't announced his future intentions at this point. A lot of these guys own stakes in gyms, things like that, nutrition companies, whatever they do. It's going to be interesting because this is a high-level guy. This is a high-level guy. What does he do? What does he transition into in a couple years? And we talk about all the broadcasting positions. We talk about all these other things. We're getting at a saturation point where they found a lot of the guys they like. You know, if Dominic Cruz can't get back in that cage, and we're not saying that's going to happen,
No. But
he's certainly been out a while. He's going to be a guy that owns that little section of that set UFC on tonight.
We've talked about that. He's fantastic. Kenny Florian is fantastic.
Chael Sonnen is in there.
Chael Sonnen is fantastic. Brian Stann is fantastic.
Randy Couture has a ticket back no matter how much bad blood there is anytime he wants it.
Yeah, when this dumb reality show at Bellator is over, I'm sure.
This isn't even the NFL where ESPN literally has 48 ex-NFLers on staff. This isn't a situation where the NFL guys can pick and choose between Fox or NFL Network and CBS and then the crazy guys at ESPN. They seem to have more guys in the NFL Network as far as former players.
Right.
This is a very limited talent pool. I mean, you and I know this in the broadcasting industry. Look how shrunken that job pool is for MMA guys. I mean, what are we doing? What's happening after? You know, you hope these guys invest well. You hope they have good gyms that they can fall back on. It's going to be interesting. We're rooting for Shane Carwin. I don't see any reason he wouldn't be successful, but it's going to be one of those transitions that everybody kind of keeps an eye on. I mean, how many guys can Dana keep on payroll? Because he's essentially been able to do that for some of them.
Yeah, but first, in some way, shape, or form.
Name somebody, though, at a championship level that he hasn't, other than Tito Ortiz, who gave him the finger and wants to run his own company. And God bless Tito Ortiz for that. There's not been one guy that he's not been able to keep on payroll.
Sure.
And they're making a lot of money. Maybe everybody gets on payroll and can make a house payment for a while still with the UFC. Maybe that's how they get around the fact that they don't have an NFL pension or things like that.
Right.
Everybody gets a job. You got to call Matt Mitrione when he screws up. You know, we pass the phone around and do the suspensions. But when you're
dealing with a roster that's 100 guys heavy, and we lost another 9 this week, we'll talk about them in segment 2. But when you're dealing with a roster that's 100 guys heavy, isn't it weird to be like, okay, you're retiring, so I'm going to give you a job in the office, and then I'm going to cut 12 more guys who are still active and can't pay their house payment?
I guess it can be weird, but I guess you can look at it at the situation, too, that these guys had an opportunity to fight in the UFC. I don't see anybody on this list that we're going to talk about that... Pablo Garza is the only name I even recognize on there. Am I missing somebody?
Bart Palaszewski is on there. Leonard Garcia, which obviously...
I'm sure you could...
Leonard Garcia is 2-9. I'm not going to defend Leonard Garcia.
You could remind me of some of their fights. Do those guys deserve money before Shane Carwin?
Not my point. My point is, isn't it interesting that we have, you know, we've got to cut some fat because we've got too many fighters on the roster. On the other side of the door, hey, who wants a secretary?
Yeah, well, I mean, and who's made you the most money? You
sure.
Take care of people for a long time. You take care of somebody, they take care of you. I don't think I've ever had a problem with UFC business-wise on that front. For all the complaining that people do and all the heat they get, whether it's fighter salaries, whether it's not disclosing fighter pay to the public, whether it's keeping pay-per-view numbers private because they don't necessarily have to disclose all of that, it's an interesting situation because I don't think they've ever really done wrong by a guy who's done them well. Guys like Ken Shamrock and Frank Shamrock and Tito Ortiz and maybe Randy Couture at this point. I know those guys will disagree with me, and they have a lot more experience with it and what's going on. But I do know, and I've dealt with people in the business world, I've dealt with people in my career where things get heated, and I'm going to blame that guy for this, and he's going to blame me for that, and the truth's probably somewhere in the middle. So overall, and you know, mainly most of the time with all these qualifiers, I think the UFC, if you're taking care of the brand for them, they're going to try to take care of you. And I'm interested to see, you know, does Shane Carwin find that liaison to the construction industry UFC position?
We will talk to Jeff Wagenheim in segment three.
Ask him about that, please.
About that from Sports Illustrated. It is Way of the Warrior. As always, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook. Just search WOW Show. Brought to you by Gun Lake Casino.
Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, brought to you by Gun Lake Casinos and Onnit Supplements, onnit.com/WOW Show. Still a lot of stuff going on in the world of mixed martial arts, and Dana with a kind of interesting announcement. He did an interview on ESPN 720 in Los Angeles on Wednesday, and we talked last week about what are we going to do about these gloves, and Ken had this very astute look at how we needed to enact a point system. And Mike Fagan, one of the guys that I follow on Twitter, wrote an awesome article this week kind of echoing your sentiments, saying essentially, first eye poke, regardless of how it is a deduction in points. Second eye poke, regardless of what it is, you are disqualified.
I think that's the situation that we need to move towards. I think what Dana said about the curved gloves and you still close your hands, I don't think you ever stop that. I don't think you ever stop research and development, so to speak, into your fighters and into your athletics.
Sure. So let's just start there. I'll read his quote. He said, "We actually started to work on a new glove that actually curves your hand. Like the glove is curved like a U. You can still open your hand, but your fingers don't point straight out." And while I think that's interesting, Ken, as you're doing it right now,
I'm trying to figure out, and that doesn't seem fair to some guys who are good on the ground.
And a lot of people are referring to, if you watch Bruce Lee's Enter the Dragon, the very first fight scene in Enter the Dragon, he is wearing a version of MMA gloves that do exactly that. They curve your fingers in, but they're really, really bulky, and they're kind of crazy looking. And like you said, Ken, it negates, to some degree, whatever that percentage is, a guy who's really good on the ground.
Well, just think about trying to loop around somebody's ankle. You're on the ground, you're trying to get your hand underneath and around, and all of a sudden you've got these modified oven mitts on your hand,
right,
that don't even move.
And then take this into account. Mike Fagan, in his article that we have linked to on our Facebook page, pointed out that in 20 years of the UFC in existence, there have never been any technical decisions. We had two in one night last week.
And I think this is reactionary. This is a victim of the moment response, obviously, of Dana. I mean, hell, that should be Dana White's nickname. Victim of the moment, Dana White. And I, God love him for it. He does that masterfully, and he reacts, and that's good. And like I said, I don't think R&D should ever stop in these situations.
But doesn't it seem like R&D hadn't started until last week?
Yes. Yes. And that's... that's kind of where I was going with this, is we haven't seen the NFL react with their helmets or pay attention to what the hell's going on with their helmets until the last 5 years when they started getting their asses sued off.
Sure.
And then, oh, wait, let's look at it. They've obviously developed, and helmet makers had more to do with it than the NFL. UFC needs to look at all their equipment, decide what's going on. I think I like the Fagan point system that you've mentioned there. You know, if you want to do that, that's a point every time, or you're going to get DQ'd, fine. Do the same thing. Cages. If you're going to hold the cage, it's a point. I mean, at a certain point, I don't want to DQ a guy for two cage holds. Well, guess what? Make it a 10-8 round. He's got to dig himself out of.
Sure.
You know, same. And I know they're inadvertent most of the time, and you've got an area there that you could negate somebody's game, but I'm talking about low blows.
Sure, but the stats are on your side for your argument, Ken. In 11 years, since 2001, this is the stat that we pulled off of MMADecisions.com, only 22 points total have been deducted during fights that went to the judges. None of those points were deducted between the years of 2003 and 2005. What the reason of that is, I don't know, but that's not a lot of deductions. There's room for some more deductions, especially when I know you're big stickler for the low blows, because there's a lot of them.
Well, and the cage grab, there's no penalty, and that can change. That can change the entire fight if you're fighting a guy and he grabs the cage and you can't take him down.
And for me, Ken, that's where I would like to see the research and development. You can deal with Paul Revelin and the guys at Rev Gear or, you know, Tap Out or whoever you want to deal with and work on gloves. I think that's awesome. But visiting the rules once a year in the summertime and doing nothing with them. I mean, Mark Ratner said last week they're going to have a meeting this summer, as they always do, and they're going to look to react in one shape or another to the unified rules, because their big stickler is the one that you and I argue about a lot, which
is the hand down,
you know, downed opponent, 3 points down, you know, playing that what Herb Dean calls the game, lifting up, putting down, lifting up,
big
putting
John
down.
Big John too.
So that's one of them. The cage grab is something that I think they should look at. The low blow is something you need to look at. And this eye poke, you fix it easily. If you go, dude, you do it twice, you've lost the fight.
That's it. That's it. You're going to change how you hold your hands. You're going to change your strategy and striking. I don't see anybody in MMA advocating karate chops, which would be the only reason you're keeping your hands open that much.
Well, one of the, you know, when you begin to learn boxing, they tell you to keep your hands loose until you hit the target. Mm-hmm. So there's some reason for it to be open. There is
right,
zero.
But there's a lot of guys playing patty cake with people's eyeballs.
There is zero reason for you to look like you're a cat.
Edward Scissorhands right. coming at you. And I just find it interesting that the UFC is now looking at their gloves and they're going to use a 40-year-old karate movie. I'm sorry, Kung Fu, Bruce Lee fans. Master of the Arts, whatever. Don't send any letters.
Nobody's sending any letters.
Bruce Lee guys will get mad on Facebook and then they'll try to feng shui me from their home. But this is a 40-year-old movie.
It wasn't even functional.
I know. But a 40-year-old movie, I love that's our start. Yes. Oh, hey, look at that. No, like nobody's seen Enter the Dragon before. I'm looking at those gloves. If they move, that might help. I'm not saying yes or no to that. I'm saying what you need to do, though, is make fouls worth the point. That's why they're fouls.
Yes, and if you look at the rules, and we've been looking at them for the last 2 weeks, as every MMA journalist has, because we're all looking at this event going, let's be victims of the moment and go, we've never had any technical decisions. We had them had two of them in one night. Are the gloves broken? Is Joe Rogan's speech that he's given for 2,700 different events about the gloves needing to be oven mitts? It'll be the Arby's oven mitt guy right. will be what you put on your hands. I don't think that that's necessarily the answer, but I think if you're going to do this research and development, I would bring in guys like St. Pierre and Anderson Silva and Cain Velasquez and all of your champs and have them be part of the research and development. They're obviously at the highest level of your organization and at the, you would assume, highest level of skill set in those disciplines. Can you use this? Is this better? Try this.
I just want points for the actual fouls, and we can work from there. I think you're 100% right, Eric. A guy does it twice, he loses a fight. As a fan, you don't want to see that happen a lot, but I certainly understand why it would happen. But low blows are the same way. A guy gets kicked with low blows twice. I mean, we've seen a couple of those fights where guys, they just keep trying to recover. You keep getting kicked down there in the undercarriage, you're not going to recover after a certain point. Two low blows, you're DQ'd. You got to move your kicks. You kicked them once down there, move your target zone. You grab the cage, that's a point. You're going to have to fight out of this round and figure out a way to either tie this round or you're going to lose it by 2 points. These are very simple things that could be done by the refs. Don't grab the cage. He knew the damn rule before he got in there.
Yep.
Don't grab the cage. It's going to be a point. Guys will change how they fight, and that is going to change the results of these things. That is going to change people getting poked in the eye. That's going to change low blows. That's going to change grabbing the cage when you actually take points away from these guys. If I'm a fighter in the cage, I'm about to be taken down. I might lose my fight in the UFC. I might lose a job. I can grab the cage with all the referee doing is yelling about it once. What do you think I'm going to choose?
Sure. Sure. But again, like I said, history is on your side, that adding more actual point deductions, actual fouls that have actual repercussions probably won't hurt too much if there's only 22 total points in 11 years that have for fights that have gone to decisions.
Yeah, it's not that big a deal, and you point the guy and you DQ him. Heck, if you're worried about the DQ, I'll let you point him all night. Wait till we get a 10-5 round because somebody.
Well,
keeps
yeah, but
up.
I mean, again, you got you
it's fun to watch
it's
at least.
It's not fun to watch. You got to protect the fighter at
well,
some
yeah,
point.
That's
being
true.
Kicked in the groin.
I guess a 10-5 cage grabbing round is a lot
that, yes,
worse.
Sure, that
or
one
better than
that one's fine than the guy in the 3-point stance being kicked in the face or poked in the eye or kicked in the junk for 5 consecutive times in a single round. But we will wait. There, like I said, Mark Ratner and those guys are going to meet this summer and go through that list of rules and hopefully fix that as the crack research and development team at the UFC that just figured out they should change the gloves last week is working diligently to come up with the Enter the Dragon model Bruce Lee gloves.
Yeah, let's look at a 40-year-old movie. Oh. Why don't we start there?
Other news this week, as I alluded to, 9 guys have been dropped from the UFC. The biggest one I think that most people would know is Leonard Garcia. He was, again, 2-9 in the UFC, so not a lot of reason to keep the guy around other than he puts on exciting fights. But I think when you look at things like a guy's record and when you're looking to cut fighters, and we had it up briefly yesterday, if you were able to see the Michael McDonald, Miguel Torres video that I posted, guys who get their bell rung that much, I think, again, for the safety of the fighters, you may need to force them to think about a new career, because if you haven't seen the video, you might find it hard to find at this point, because I've been searching around. I know I had to send it to you on Twitter.
I didn't have it by the time I saw it.
Right. So essentially what it was is, if you remember the fight, Michael McDonald uppercuts Miguel Torres into next Tuesday. Miguel Torres asks Firas Sahabi, who is, of course, the trainer of GSP and Rory McDonald, all those guys, asks him what happened. And he goes, "You got knocked out by an uppercut. What weight was it at? Who was I fighting?" And then they help him up to the stool, and he asks, "What just happened? Where am I? When does the fight?" I mean, it's a horrific study in what happens to these guys' brains after they fight. So when you see a guy like Leonard Garcia, who is what we call a fan favorite, 2-9 and getting his bell rung that brutally, that often, I think that's almost a cut in hopes that he can, you know, maybe recover and do something else. Pablo Garza, like we said, Bar Palaszewski from WEC came over and didn't really have that great of a career in the UFC. He has been cut. All those guys could end up in Bellator if they want, or some other organization. But
couldn't they just use that $50K Anderson Silva got fined to pay these guys?
Which is also the other story, is that Anderson Silva was fined $50,000. He missed one of the days of media. He was supposed to go all over L.A. and promote UFC 162 as he takes on Chris Weidman. Dana was super jacked. Anderson says he wasn't aware that it was an obligation, and he went back to Brazil. Chris Weidman says, "I'm not really that mad, but it's part of the job." This, again, is going to be something that I think they're going to have to react to. And by that, I mean, on this show and on many other shows, we've had some run-ins with fighters who absolutely hate talking to us. And I understand it. Who wants to answer the same questions over and over and over again, as George St. Pierre says? However, that's the job. That's how, when you go to Fox, that's the job, guys. You know, if you want to be in Barnes in the country fighting for $5 a night and all the beer you can drink, cool, don't talk to the media. That's awesome. However, if you want people to buy into this fight, Anderson Silva, and I'm not blaming Anderson. If Anderson says it's a mistake, it's a mistake. We're still a ways out for anybody to be freaking out, really, at this point. But I think the fine is just.
I think everything kind of worked out here. Anderson says he missed it. Dana says you have to be here, so you're fined. I actually like how all this worked out. Your point is great. Though, you have to promote these fights. Who could we not get away from last week? Floyd Mayweather.
Yep.
Floyd Mayweather. We couldn't get away from him last week. He already made his $32 million. He did not have to promote that fight a single time, and he walks out with $32 million. Couldn't get away from him last week. Hell, he flies in reporters and puts them in the hotel so that he can talk to them and promote the fight. That's what Floyd Mayweather does. Every time I hear somebody in MMA talk about boxing money, I want to remind them there's two of those a year. And look what Floyd does. Floyd goes out and he sells the fight. He sells the fight.
And I will tell you this, Ken. You know, we have a great relationship with Mayweather and Mayweather's company because he is a fan of media. You can think about his fighting style or what he does outside of the ring, whatever you want to do. But I will tell you that you are absolutely right. This is a guy who, as far as I know, the only boxer that essentially owns the arena that he's fighting in the night that he fights, and all of the employees are his. The other guy across the ring is working for
him. He hires Golden Boy.
Yes. And then his opponent across the ring will be working for him that night. He has set up this little empire, and he does it because he's embraced media. And he does, you know, the Showtime version of the HBO 360 or whatever they call the Showtime version.
All Access,
yeah,
I think
whatever.
Showtime's,
I mean, he does all of those things, and he does them because he wants to continually be in your face. And guys like Anderson Silva, as awesome as you are, you need to sell me on Chris Weidman. I love Chris as a prospect. I'm not sure he can beat you. I'm not even sure he can compete with you. So you got to sell it. The way that Chael Sonnen was able to sell this fight with John Jones. And yeah, the pay-per-view buy was only $500,000, but I mean, a half a million
people. That's a UFC $500,000 who runs pay-per-views every single month.
Uh-huh.
And that's a big deal.
At $60 a piece, that's a nice chunk of change that you did by running your mouth for a month and a half. And so, yes, you've got to fix this. These guys either have to be on board, and they've done some work with social media where they give every month somebody gets a bonus for how much work they've done on social media, and I like that. But this has to be a main tenet of what you do as an employee, a contracted employee to the UFC, is that media is part of the gig. I don't care if you hate it. And if you do hate it, guess what? You're going to pay $50,000. I'm going to tell you this. Guys like Chris Weidman don't have, and he didn't miss anything, I'm not saying, but a prospect coming up who's got a big fight doesn't have $50,000 to blow.
Yeah, the only thing I see here is, depending on how much this were to happen or if somebody does or doesn't do it, $50,000 probably isn't making that big a dent for Anderson Silva. You got to, obviously.
It's May, bro. If he misses more of these.
No. And I don't think he will.
No, but if he did, like, 50 at a time to July is.
That's why I have a problem with nobody here. Anderson says a mistake. Yeah. Okay, fine. It's a mistake. It's like the point thing. Let's go back to the point. Here's your point. $50,000. You missed it. We're sorry you missed it. You didn't mean to miss it. Where's our check?
Yep.
I like that portion of it.
Sure.
And there's going to be a lot of people. It should be about the athleticism, not the spectacle. You tell me, you want to watch an NFL game that's been publicized, it's Monday night, you want to see two people or two quarterbacks that are going at it that aren't actually on the field with each other at the same time, but that's what we see and that's what's promoted, and those guys talk and they're required to talk to media. You want to see that or a very athletic Australian rugby game? I think the athletics are the same in both of those contests.
Absolutely.
What is it about the NFL? It's the sizzle. And I don't think these guys aren't on board with the sizzle, but I don't think they quite understand that this is the deal that they signed when they signed with Fox. Dana White knows that's the deal. They have to launch a sports net. They have to launch ESPN's competitor in months. That's what they have to do in the UFC. They have to do that. Dana White understands it, and he's trying to get the fighters on board.
And we'll see what happens. All right, when we get back, like I said, we're going to talk to our friend Jeff Wagenheim from Sports Illustrated and talk about Shane Carwin's impact on the sport. And like we talked about in segment one, is this kind of a model for some of these older fighters who are getting into the organization and maybe don't have a ton of years underneath them? We'll talk about it next. It's Way of the Warrior, brought to you by Gun Lake Casino. Here we go, yo.
Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, as always, powered by Gun Lake Casinos and on its supplements at onnit.com/wowshow. Joining us on the line, dear friend of the show, Jeff Wagenheim from SportsIllustrated.com. And we've been talking all show long, essentially, about Shane Carwin and certainly his impact in the heavyweight division, Jeff. But wondering if a guy like Daniel Cormier looks at Shane Carwin's career and thinks, well, I'm getting older. He only had six fights, and that was all for him. I probably should put the pedal to the metal, don't you think?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, even without looking at Carwin's career, he probably would want to be thinking that way. Although, you know, there are other guys who just haven't had the misfortune that Carwin did. The injuries really sidetracked him in a bad way. I mean, I realize he lost his last two fights, but there are other guys who've lost a couple of fights and come back. Look at Roy Nelson, for example, who sort of resuscitated his career.
Well, and Shane, if you look at him, I mean, he lost to two former champs. He lost to Brock Lesnar and lost to Junior Dos Santos, and that's it. And like you said, the back injuries and all the other nagging injuries were pretty much what kind of sealed his fate in the last 2 years. What do you think, and when it's all said and done, what do you think, A, he will do next, and B, how will he be remembered in the heavyweight division?
Well, what he'll do next is probably what he's already been doing. Isn't he an engineer, and he was working full-time even while he was training? So,
yes.
So unlike a lot of guys, he's pretty much, you know, he doesn't have to worry too much about, you know, getting a gig on Fuel TV or something. I mean, he's got something going on pretty good. What is he remembered for? Well, probably a little unfairly, people will look at him as a missed opportunity or whatever. But you know, when you really think about it, even those last two fights, those two losses, I mean, the Dos Santos loss he was just dominated, but, you know, being dominated by Dos Santos is not the worst thing in the world. A lot of people have had that happen. But the Lesnar fight, I actually would say that the first round of the Brock Lesnar fight was Shane Carwin's shining moment. I mean, that was the you know, he had won 12 fights before then, including a Frank Mir knockout. But the way he beat down Lesnar for that first round was nobody had seen that happen before. You know, we saw it later on with Kane and also Overeem.
Overeem,
but nobody had seen that happen to Lesnar before, and Carwin went out and did it.
Yeah, he certainly exposed the fact that Brock had always hated being punched in the face, and that was kind of the story of that first round. But when we were talking in segment one of the things that we were thinking is when you look at a guy like Shane Cowan, highly educated, has his engineering career going, but if you're leaving the sport, and the UFC cut another nine fighters this week, if you're leaving the sport and you're not one of those people who gets picked up by Fuel TV, what do you think fighters should be doing to plan for the future? A guy like Rich Franklin, who fans love, but he hasn't really been considered to be part of this Fox Fuel kind of scenario. And I know he's starting a juice line out in California, but is that what these guys should be doing? What do you think, as an insider to the sport, they should be doing to plan for the future?
Well, I would say that, you know, probably more so than athletes in most other sports, it seems as though the MMA fighters have been better educated and might have other non-sports related opportunities out there in terms of things that are going on within sports. That's something that's embryonic, and that's something that's brand new for them. And some of them might have opportunities, opening a gym or getting involved with some kind of company, some kind of company that's related to the sport. So, I think that the guys who are leaving the sport now, maybe it's a little bit too soon for them to make a big chunk of change off of their names. But I think that a lot of these guys, are college educated and have some other things that they can fall back on. Maybe not so much as Carlin does, but it seems like a lot of guys out there, have something to fall back on. Unlike, say, some baseball player who gets signed right out of high school and somehow his career stalls in Double-A baseball. Well, where is he going? He might have a high school degree. A lot of these guys have college degrees and might be a little. I wouldn't say they're set up for the future, but they at least have an opportunity to grow something.
Well, and even you would know the stat better than I, but isn't it something like 85% of NFL players end up broke when they're done playing? And that doesn't seem like what's going to happen with these guys as they leave the UFC.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, obviously some guys will
sure
have some problems, but one of the things that happens with sports as it becomes a bigger and bigger money business, these guys, as the money gets so big, they don't, a lot of these guys come from a poor background. I'm talking more of the mainstream athletes, the NFL, NBA, guys who aren't used to handling that amount of money, and so naturally they rely on some other person, some professional, and sometimes they suffer the consequences for that. At the level where the MMA fighters, the UFC guys particularly, are at, they're making, the top guys can make some money, but the middle of the road guys are still probably at the point where they can manage their own finances, and they can pick and choose how they're going to spend their money, and so maybe they're a little bit more in touch with the finances than some of the some of the NFL stars and NBA stars are.
Talking to Jeff Wagenheim, SportsIllustrated.com. One last question before I let you go. Ken and I were talking earlier about, when you look at a guy like Shane Carwin, who obviously had planned for the future, you look at guys like Daniel Cormier just bursting onto the scene in the UFC, at least in that regard. There's only really been two guys who have performed at a high level when they get up in that age, and one of them is Randy Couture, Anderson Silva, the other one. Your thoughts on John maybe joining that, or do you think, because we had talked about this, you think he'll be done in his mid-30s because he started so early, or will he be a guy who fights into his 40s?
Who are we talking about?
John Jones.
Oh, Jones. You know what? It's hard to even imagine the guy in his up into his 30s. I mean, he's already well established as perhaps the greatest light heavyweight champion ever. And what is he? Is he 26 yet?
Is he 20, 26? If he's 26, he just turned 26. I think he's
25, 26. I mean, so imagine pushing him forward, say, 10 years. It's hard to imagine a guy like that fighting for another 10 years. And if he fought another 10 years, he'd only be 35 or 36, so he'd be way far away from where Couture was. But one thing you have to look at, I mean, Couture went forever, but if you look at his record, I mean, he had his ups and downs and backs and forths and all that kind of stuff. His record is not unblemished by any means. And look at John Jones, who, is essentially an undefeated fighter. So if he's going to continue along the trajectory he's on right now, where he just blows away the light heavyweight division, and by the end of the year is starting to fight heavyweights. You know, time will tell. We'll see what happens once he starts getting the bigger guys. If he can handle those guys the way he handles the light heavyweights, and you know, six fights from now he's undefeated. Maybe he's even the heavyweight champion. Who knows? I can't imagine him doing it for that much longer. He's making a lot more money than the guys were back when Randy was in his prime. But who knows? Who knows?
Do you think, John Jones, it's inevitable that he loses?
I think it's inevitable that everybody except Floyd Mayweather loses. I mean, really. Because Jones is not going to pick his opponents the same way. I mean, I think that the UFC is run a little differently. And you look at the records of all of the guys in the UFC. That's one of the things that's so amazing about Jones, and even more so what's so amazing about Anderson Silva. You know, these guys have gone on these incredible winning streaks, and they're fighting the best guy available. Now, in the case of Jones, the last two fights went away from that. You know, he fought a couple of middleweights in his last two fights. But for the most part, moving forward, you know, he's going to be fighting whatever is left of the light heavyweight division, and he's going to be fighting heavyweights. And it's hard for me to imagine that someone somewhere along the line isn't going to take him. I don't know. It's hard to imagine him just continuing to do this against guys who are his size and bigger. But, you know, the guy's been amazing so far, so, don't quote me on that.
Well, and Jeff, and it's always fun to believe in superheroes, at least that's...
Yeah, exactly. You know, who could beat John Jones?
Exactly.
Batman, forget about it.
Green Lantern, it ain't going to happen. Not at all.
No.
Jeff Wagenheim joining us, good friend of the show. Always fun to have you online. If people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, my Twitter is very simple. It's my name, Jeff Wagenheim, spelled with one G, Wagenheim. Pretty easy Twitter handle. And you also can go to sportsillustrated.com and click on the MMA link, and you'll get my stuff. You'll also get some of that stuff with that Floyd Mayweather guy in those other boxes as well.
Jeff Wagenheim, always a pleasure to have you. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
You too. It's great to be on with you guys. See ya.
Jeff Wagenheim joining us, and when we come back, we will break down what's left in news. It is Way of the Warrior, powered by Gun Lake Casino, and part of the Fight Fans Radio Network. Make sure you get the show either on the website at fightfansradio.com or on Stitcher or iTunes. It's Way of the Warrior.
Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien along with Ken Evans. Sean Desai is out this week. He will be back next week. And speaking of next week, rumor has it we will have Bruce Buffer on to talk a little bit about his new book, It's Time. And so we will bring that to you when, of course, that happens. The other news, as we do every week when we get to this point, is that Mark Hunt is having some legal issues. It seems that in 2002, he had an arrest that he claims wasn't even his fault. Kind of irrelevant. The point being, twice he's gone to the airport in New Zealand, and twice they've denied him his visa to Las Vegas. Why is that important? Well, because he's fighting Junior Dos Santos on May 25th. Why is that important? Well, because it has huge ramifications in the heavyweight division. Why else is it important? Excuse me? Because historically speaking, Junior Dos Santos, not very lucky on Memorial Day, as that was when the Ream tested positive for crazy steroids. And now, of course, Mark Hunt is not able to get on a plane. He says and has said since yesterday that the UFC is on the issue, and this should have no bearing whatsoever on the fight on May 25th. But we all hold our breath in hopes that that is absolutely positively true. In other news, if you're a fan of the UFC, you're probably really excited about Fox Sports 1. We've been talking about it. The new channel is going to launch in the middle of August. And they're going to have an event, and then 2 weeks later have another event. It's going to be essentially a two-hour prelim into something else. And all of that stuff is laid out on our Facebook page. But they've got an extensive plan of what they're going to do for the first 6 weeks of the channel. And on top of that, if a TV channel isn't enough, now you have a subscribe-based YouTube channel. Yep, YouTube and the UFC being one of the first brands to do this new model. Now, normally when you watch a YouTube video, what happens is you have to watch that 30-second commercial, and that's how the brand, in this case the UFC, would make money, based on how many people watch that advertisement. But all of us who like YouTube know that that's super annoying. So YouTube and Google have changed the way that that model works and now are offering monthly subscription-based models. And the YouTube has taken up the YouTube. The UFC, excuse me, has taken them up on it. So for $5.99 a month, you can subscribe to the UFC's pay channel. They will still have a free channel, but you can get the pay channel, which will have full fights and full shows. So if you want to play catch-up, or let's say you don't have cable for whatever reason, you can now get a bulk of your archived material from the UFC online on YouTube for $5.99 a month, which is a steal. I don't know that it's going to stay that low. Hopefully it will. That's kind of a nice price point, $5.99 a month, cheaper than Netflix and obviously cheaper than Xbox Live, not cheaper than the PlayStation Network, but cheap nonetheless. And YouTube, a great provider, UFC, a great brand to put all of that stuff on there. If anything else breaks this weekend, we will let you know on Twitter and on Facebook. Just search WOW Show. And you want to get the show? You can find us on iTunes by searching Way of the Warrior, or check out fightfansradio.com as they generously help provide the show to you on Stitcher and on iTunes. Search them on Twitter at Fight Fans Radio or online at fightfansradio.com. We will see you next week. It's Way of the Warrior. And all the people should be raising their glasses. Flow crazy, celebrating the madness. I never thought I would deliver no classics. Then I hooked up with them and they delivered no classics.